Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's now time for our interview specials. Take a trip back in time to the golden era of football. Sit back and listen up. It's time for the main event with the Phoenix Five and a 90s football icon. On this week's show, we have Steven Show. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back and enjoy the show.
You can't win anything with kids.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
How much are the players looking forward to Arsene Wenger arriving?
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Phoenix Five. We have another special guest this week. We've been very lucky enough to be joined by former Swiss international, Liverpool, Blackburn and Celtic centre-back, Stephen Henshaw. Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Hello, very well. Thank you.
Thank you ever so much for coming on. I'm also joined this week by David Holland. All right, Dave.
How are you doing, guys? Thanks for coming on, Stephen.
So as you can hear, it's just me and David today. Everyone else is at the pub, it seems. So we're going to make sure we make this a really good one. So I'm going to start with your early career, Stephen. You was at in Switzerland. How did you get into football? What caused you to get into playing football when you were younger?
I think back these days, there was not much to do apart of playing football, to be honest. It wasn't like today when you have all this PlayStation and stuff. I was living in quite a small town. And more or less everybody was playing football here in Switzerland. So that's why I just started, and I loved it. You know, I think from the first kick I had on the ball, really, I enjoyed it so much that I was playing all day, all day. My mom had to call me, you know, at night to come back to eat and all that stuff, doing the homework. Because the only thing I wanted to do was really playing football. So that's how I started.
And you, how did you, so in the, obviously in England, there's like the YTS team or the youth system. Was you scouted or did you join like an academy at a young age? Or was it kind of a different case where they picked you up at when you was 15, 16 and you joined your first club?
Quite different in Switzerland, which is not, it's better now. Back at the time, it wasn't a big football country, I would say. So what you know in England when you have scouts at a very young age, when then you have academy, same thing, very young age, it didn't take place in Switzerland, to be honest. So I was more or less playing for my local team until I was at least 12. Then I moved not far to a better team, but still local, still only training twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday, playing Saturday. That was it, really. And the coaches we had wasn't really proper qualified coaches. So it was a totally different setup from what you can have in England these days, even back 20, 30 years ago. It's better now in Switzerland, but in Switzerland, until you are 11 or 12, you always play in your local team. You don't get scouted or stuff like that. So so for me, it really started when I was 15. And 15, there is the national team. You know, that's the first time there is a national team, the under 15, and then they start to scout during the country. They make tests and stuff like that. So I've been a bit selected, and from that age 15, then I moved to Neuchâtel Xamax, which, you know, back at the time was one of the best team in Switzerland. They were playing in Europe every year, winning the league here. And Roy Hodgson, that is well known, obviously, in England, was the manager at Neuchâtel Xamax. And he gave me my first opportunity to play with the first team quite at an early age. I just turned 17 when I played my first game. And funny, the first game was Real Madrid, Neuchâtel Xamax in the UEFA Cup. So not a bad start. But that's how it went for me, you know, with my football in Switzerland, you know, from the young age until I reached 15 at Neuchâtel Xamax.
That's, I can't pronounce the name, so I'm not even going to try.
No problem.
A disservice, so I won't try. But yeah, so because Christian Gross is also from the same club, there's quite a few players in the past, Switzerland players and international players that have come through the same route as you have. You mentioned Roy Hodgson. What was it like working? Because he's obviously now, I don't know if it's the same then, he was quite regimented in coaching. It was very much tactics and formation opposed to more free ball. How did you find that as a defender?
I learned a lot, to be honest, with Roy. And like you said, it was a lot about the tactics with him. So I must say that when he came to Switzerland, I think he came from a Swedish club. At first, you know, the training session sometimes can be a bit long, like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, a lot of tactics and stuff. So it was a bit strange for us because we were not used to. And but the results were good, you know. On the Saturday, everybody knew really what he had to do. We were very strong defensively, playing a quite direct game, you know, the 4-4-2, classic 4-4-2. But we had some good results. And then he moved on and he took over as the Swiss national manager. And I think that's really when his career, you know, took, you know, another direction. I mean, he qualified Switzerland. I think it was the first time for 40 years that Switzerland went to the World Cup 94 in the USA. And then he went to Inter Milan and so on. But yeah, I think, you know, he was tactically very aware. He was a gentleman, to be honest. He was really a nice person. Nice person. And I would say very educated. He was speaking, I think, 7 or 8 languages.
Yeah.
When he came, he didn't speak a word of French, but he learned so quickly. I think 2 or 3 months, and he could have a conversation. He was, you know, talking French with the players, and he was a quick learner and a gentleman, like I said.
So in 1995, you moved to Hamburg, where you played under Felix Magath.
Yeah.
He was manager at the time. How was it working under him?
Big shock. Massive shock. Why? Because moved from Switzerland to Germany. I was quite young. I was 20 or something. And obviously the difference when you move from small country and especially football country as Switzerland to a big country, football-wise, Hamburg, big club. It's a shock in itself. You have to remember that at the time you were only allowed 3 foreign players in every team, not like these days. So the foreign players, they had to make the difference. You had to be better than the German player. And with 20, you know, the pressure that goes with it was quite hard. And then we had Felix Magath. Felix Magath was only assistant. He wasn't head coach. But after 8 games, they sacked the head coach, unfortunately for me, because he was the one who came, you know, to take me to Hamburg. And Felix was a promoted head coach. With Felix, it was 2 years. It was very hard. Very, very hard. What was so hard? Sorry?
What was so hard? Was it his personality? Was it the training?
It was his personality. It was the training session. It was everything. The training session, I think in 2 years, and I'm not lying, I must have had 3 days off. And I'm not lying. 3 days off in 2 seasons. I mean, we played Saturday. On the Sunday, we only train in the morning if we would be winning on Saturday. If we would have draw or lost, we would train twice on the Sunday. So double session Sunday. And then back normal, Monday, Tuesday twice, Wednesday, Thursday twice, Friday, training, go to the hotel, play Saturday. And the training session, they were really hard. It was very physical, very hard. And Felix is a personality. He had a strong personality. So it wasn't really the coach who would put an arm on the shoulder, I can tell you. So, it's been very difficult.
Did anyone challenge it? Like the captain and the players come together and say, listen, this is not what we want to do? Was there anything like that? Anything that you could be done to kind of say, hey, look, we don't mind training, but this is ridiculous?
You know, when he took over, the team was 17 out of 18, you know. And we ended up finish in the Europa League fifth. So obviously in the paper, in the media, Felix has done a tremendous job. He was called the magical Felix, you know. So at the end of today, on the Saturday, we were winning most of the time, or at least drawing. We didn't close many games the first season. And it was difficult to argue with him. Because at the end of the day, as a manager, the result is everything. And probably I think the German mentality, very hardworking people, I must admit. When you told them you do 10 laps, they do 10 laps. When you told them you do 20 laps, they do 20 laps. It was... Back at the time, it was like that. Maybe it has changed with the society in general. It probably has changed. But, you know, in 95, that was the case. So nobody really challenged him the first season. The second season wasn't as good. And in April, May, when it was only 6-7 games left, the results, you know, were not that good. And in the team, you know, like the captain, the big players, they starting, you know, to say, listen, we can't carry on training like that. We are tired before the game, heavy legs and stuff. And we don't win anymore on the Saturday. We have to change. And he got the sack, I think, 3 or 4 games before the end of the season.
Yeah, he was only there for 19 months, I think it was. He was there before. So I think his methods, you can do them, as you said, for a season and a half if you're winning, because a bit like Liverpool and a lot of the clubs now, if you've got a high press, the life cycle of that team is so much shorter because your intensity is so high. If you're playing every day, your body's not recovering, you're never going to be able to have that sustainability. So it's very, so 97 comes along, Felix is gone, the new manager comes in, but you get a chance to move. And I read a rumor, and I'm not sure if it's true, but you turned down Man United at the time to move to Blackburn. Is that true?
Yeah.
What?
The story was Roy Hodgson took over at Blackburn in June 97 or in May. It was already signed in May, probably from Inter Milan. And he asked me if I wanted to join Blackburn. I said, yes, I want to come to England Premier League. You know, I was more than happy. And I had a clause in my contract. I could leave for a certain amount. I can't remember the amount.
I think it was 3.5 million, I think it was.
Yeah, something like that. So I knew, you know, if a club bring this money, I can move on. So I said, yeah, to Roy, I'm coming. And then it was in June. I was back in Switzerland, and I remember, you know, I came. I was out visiting some friend. I came back home, and still had, I already had a mobile was in 97. It was the start of the mobile phone. I could see, you know, like 25 missing calls. That's the only thing you could see on the screen. And I thought, strange, you know, I was like 2 hours friend visiting and 25 calls, you know. Actually, it was my agent who tried to ring me so many times. And he said, listen, you know, you have been in contact with Manchester United. I said, yeah, you know, Manchester United, massive club, you know, so you think. And then the next few days, to be honest, I didn't know really what to do because I said yes to Roy. So I gave my in my word, really. But in fact, I didn't sign the contract just yet. I even signed the contract. Or I could have technically still moved to Manchester United. So I was thinking, you know, what should I do? And, you know, difficult situation, to be honest. By the end of the day, I thought I was 23. And then I knew at the time it was still Bruce Bannister playing, you know, for Man U. So how can you get past these two when you're only 23? You move to a new country, a new league. So I thought, yeah, you will be maybe number three or number four. You will play Tuesday night in the League Cup. I don't think you're going to play many games on the Saturday, you know. And on top of that, I knew Roy gave me my first chance as Neuchâtel Xamax, my first cap with the national team. And I thought, you know, it's better to go one step after another. And Blackburn is still a very good club. They were champion 2 years, you know, before I came. So that was the story with Man United.
Amazing. So you obviously had a good relationship with Roy, which is a good start. Did you think, we've had a few people ask a few questions. Do you think at that Christmas when you was, I think, second in the league, they're talking the squad that we can win this? Because it was about Christmas. I think your fixtures were quite congested, but you had a chance then to push on and was really challenging. Did you think and manager think and everyone think, right, we've got a real chance of having a go here?
Yeah, I think, you know, I remember we beat Arsenal away, I think 3-1 or 3-0, mid-December. And we were very well placed in the league. We had a good team. But probably, you know, we were missing a few players, like a bit of depth, you know, on the bench. We didn't have, you know, that many options going forward. We had, you know, the two strikers, Kevin Gallagher and Chris Sutton. They were the two main strikers. We had Martin Dahlin. He was a good player, but he was a lot injured. And part of these three, and Martin, like I said, was most of the time he wasn't in the squad. So we had nobody really. So the squad was a bit thin probably. If we would have acted maybe one or two players, you know, at Christmas or in January, when you need, you know, to push just before Christmas. And at the time you could have transfer every day. When you have the squad with a bit thin in January, February, it's hard. You get a bit tired, you know, a lot of games, Christmas, New Year. Started to lose a few games and then we drop a bit in the league.
I'm a Man United fan, so I'm obviously happy that you didn't win the league. But looking back at some of the results, you had a really good season. I think what you said is actually spot on, because you got to, after the Arsenal game, soon after, I think it was mid-January, Darlene was out for 7 weeks. You picked up a few draws and you can see Man United's momentum started picking up. The draws just tailed off slightly. David, you had some more questions about the Blackburn squad.
Yeah, I was going to say, you played with some characters, i.e. Craig Bellamy, two guy. Was it true that two guys used to smoke every half time? Is that true? To light a fag up?
Yeah, it is true, but you know, I think the funny thing is in England, you don't mind to have a lager, to have a beer, you know. And when I came in 95, that was the case. It was like normal to have a few beer even during the week after the game. And, you know, player who smoke, it seems a bit weird. It's different. It's exactly the opposite in Europe, I would say, on the continent.
Yeah.
They don't like people who drink, you know, but they don't mind too much people smoking. And I remember in Hamburg, we were traveling quite a lot because Hamburg is right up north. We were traveling by bus and we had always, you know, Germany, it's a big country, you know, 7-8 hours to go and the same to come back. And on the bus, on the team bus, player were smoking, you know. So sometimes for 7-8 hours, smoking all the way long. So you could see, you know, the big smoke, you know, in the team bus. It wasn't a big deal, really, you know. So yeah, I can tell you that two guys, had a fag, you know, before the game, at halftime, after the game.
How did you find moving to Blackburn, obviously, the Lancashire club, the culture, as you just mentioned about the drinking and culture that you had? Arsenal were famous. They had the Tuesday night club, so everyone would finish training on a Tuesday, go for a few pints. Did you find that there was a slight divide on the English players and the foreign players coming in? Or was it quite just one big squad and you all went out for one night a week? And
obviously, when I came, this, I would say, drinking culture, it was something I didn't, as a foreign, you're not used to. I would say you don't grow up, you're not educated, especially in sport, elite sport. They always tell you drinking is not allowed. When you come to England and you see the players, they don't mind having a proper, you know, a few, you know. And it's quite normal. You are very surprised. I remember when I arrived at Blackburn, we went to Sweden for the training camp. It was in July. And in Sweden in July, it was quite nice. We were near the sea. Next to the sea, there were a beach. So we were training in the morning. We had a good training session in the morning. But then in the afternoon, we went on the beach. There were this bar where you have, you know, live singers and stuff. As a team, we all went there. And we were drinking lager for 3 or 4 hours on the beach, you know. So it's something like, yeah, like I said, very surprised, but to be honest, I enjoyed. I enjoyed because we had a great team spirit, and it didn't stop us the next morning to have a really good training session, very high intensity and everything. So, but like you said, it was normal. The Tuesday normal after training, going to the pub, knowing that Wednesday was off, no problem. On the way back on the team bus, it was normal that you had beers for the 3-4 hours, drive. No problem.
Who is the worst culprit? Did someone take you and say, this is what we do in England? We go out, have a few drinks. who turned you into this nice guy who just came in, trained normally, and then turned you into, let's go and have 5 pints after every game? Who was that?
At Blackburn, we had Gary Flitcroft, we had Colin Hendry, we had Chris Sutton, we had Billy McKinley, we had Tim Sherwood, Jeff Kenner, Stephen Ripley, we had Kevin Gallagher. Well, he wasn't the most big drinker, Kevin, but we had all these British player, you know, and it was all the same, more or less. So. Yeah, straight away you realize, oh, it works here in England as a foreign players. And then I think you have to adapt to that. Probably some foreign players, I would say, maybe they have problem to adapt. They're not used to this, let's say, lifestyle. going to the pub, having a fish and chips after the game. Yeah, I can imagine. Or I played with some players. They didn't adapt. And then it's difficult, you know, to mix with the team, to be well accepted. And you know, that's why some foreign players, I think they have. It's maybe easier these days because there is a lot of foreign players in the clubs, and the culture has changed as well.
Yeah,
I don't think there is this drinking culture as it was before. But yeah. If you don't adapt, you won't enjoy your football. You won't feel comfortable in the team, in the dressing room. So you have to, I would say, to like this culture.
Do you think Arsene Wenger changed that?
Yeah, I think Arsene Wenger was the first foreign coach, and very soon after Gerard Houllier, because Gerard Houllier at Liverpool. I think that's the first thing he tried to change. It was the drinking culture. And I remember there were quite a few players at Liverpool who liked a few lager, and he get rid of them, or he tried to educate like Jamie Carragher, you know, and Jamie will tell you that, you know, in a way he's grateful to because probably, or it's definitely the right thing, you know, to have the right diet and stuff like that if you want to play 15, 17 years in the Premier League. Steven Gerrard, in a way, is probably the same than Jamie. So I think, yeah, Arsene started, and then Gerrard, Houllier. And then you had after that a few foreign manager who came, and now these days there are quite a few.
Was there anyone at Blackburn who was a bit of a character, like a live wire, who was just a bit off, not normal? Some would say.
I would say Billy McKinley, Billy McKinley, and Chris Sutton.
Oh really, Chris Sutton?
Oh yeah.
Oh, really? Quite quiet. What would you say? Oh no. Tell us something we don't know then about Sutton, because we always see him now on Five Live in the UK, and he's quite dull.
Chris is a clever guy. Chris Sutton, well educated as well, you know, clever. But in the dressing room, he wasn't the quietest, I can tell you. No, he was always joking. He was winding you up, and he was with his big friend Billy McKinley. Him and Billy, you know, they were the most lively in the dressing room at Blackburn, definitely.
Were you disappointed that Hodgson left so soon after signing you?
Yeah, I was. I was, but at the end of the day, we were responsible, the players, because the first season, we had a great season. The second season, we started badly. And even we had the same squad, more or less. We had good players. We should never ended up relegated. Never, never. And unfortunately, like always, you know, the manager will pay for the result. And yes, I was disappointed that in October he was sacked. Yes, I was.
And then Brian Kidd came in. He left Man United at the time, which we all thought would be a good move. When he left, we thought, oh, it'll give him a good chance. But what was it like under Kidd? Because I think number twos don't always make good number ones. And you know, player management and coaching and, you know, tactical training are all very different facets of the game. Do you think it was a bit too early for him, or was it the job too big?
No, I think, to be honest, I liked Brian Kidd. I think he's a good person. I liked the training session. You could see what's coming from Man United. It was all about passing, you know, passing, movement. It was different than what I used to do before. It was something new for me. But it was great. It was really enjoyable. I can tell you that the training session, the week, it was enjoyable. And the man itself was a very, very good man. Good man, good manner. So I like Brian Kidd. I would say the problem, and that's my opinion, the problem was probably too nice. That's what I would say. You know, probably too nice sometimes.
You played a big advantage of him being nice.
Probably. You know, out of 30 men squads, as a manager, you are the chef, you are the boss. And as a boss, sometimes you have to be ruthless. And if you take the Sir Alex was ruthless on many occasions. And that's what I could say. Probably this in some occasion too nice, and players took advantage. And at the end of the day, players at Blackburn back in 97 were responsible for the relegation. Nobody else.
Did you have any, obviously you're at the bottom, you're fighting relegation, the manager you said is quite nice. Did you fall out of anyone in the squad because they weren't putting the effort in, or they knew we go down, I'm going to move on to another club? Or did you still all stay together as a team?
No, I think we, obviously if you get relegated with a good squad, there was something wrong. And there were players who didn't put the effort 100%. Because if you look at the team, the squad we had, if everybody would have put the effort in, we would never have been relegated, you know. But I didn't ever follow with anybody really. We tried. We had when Keed arrived. I think at one stage, back in February, we had a good run of games. We won a few games. And in the league, we thought, we're in a good run. We won't be relegated. We were quite confident. I remember we had some good wins. And in the league, you know, it looks quite good. And then for some reason, in March, April, start losing again a few games. And then I think we were not ready to fight relegation because we never thought we would be in this situation. And that was the biggest problem at the end of the season. It's when you realize now we are in a battle against relegation, but you never thought you would be in such position. You're not ready in your head. And just to try to commute in your head, it doesn't happen like that. That's why you have teams when the first game of the season, you know, start, they know, they fight for the survival. And that's the team very often who are going to survive because they know that. At Blackburn, we were not ready for that. We were ready to push, you know, from being fifth in the season before to do at least the same or even better.
Crazy.
You know, that's what happened at the end of the season.
So that you... Liverpool come in for you at the end of the season. Blackburn are relegated. Was you forced to move? Did you ask for a move, or did the transfer just come in?
I had a clause in my contract, like in if we were relegated at Blackburn, the clause was only if we are relegated, you can move from a certain amount of money. Been relegated, unfortunately, and then Liverpool came. So it was, to be honest, an easy decision to go to Liverpool, to be honest. Yeah.
Did anyone else come in for you at the time? Any European clubs, or was it just Liverpool in for you and you knew straight away?
There were a few clubs. And in Germany, I had quite a good name. When I left Hamburg, I only played two seasons, but I had quite a good name in Germany. I had Borussia Dortmund, I remember. And a few other clubs. But the Premier League, that's what I wanted. That's where I wanted to play.
The drinking culture. You was embedded in that, and that was it. You was here now.
Yeah, you know.
Did Everton come in for you as well? Sorry. Did Everton come in for you as well at that time?
No, I don't think so. No. Maybe rumours. But
yeah, I heard a rumour that Everton was in at the same time.
Yeah, probably rumours. But, you know, quite early, I decided I'd go to Liverpool, to be honest. And like I said, you know, I wanted to stay in the Premier League. I wanted to stay in England. And, I adapted well to the lifestyle in England. Not only, you know, I mean the drinking culture, but the culture itself
Yeah.
So I like the English, British people mentality, football, atmosphere and everything. I didn't want to move.
So you moved to Liverpool in the 99-2000 season, and you immediately helped transform Liverpool because they were often inconsistent in defence. The year before, they had conceded 49 goals in the league alone. But then Sami Hyypiä came in at the same time as you came in. So there was a new centre-back partnership. And then that season, you allowed 30 goals. It's a massive difference. It was a league best. But it's the following year, obviously, that you're most remembered for. And I know you've probably spoken about this quite a lot. But first of all, you won the FA Cup, the League Cup, which was quite one-sided. Then you had the FA Cup game against Arsenal. So how has that been? Obviously, the FA Cup was a massive competition around the world. Being in your first final with them, how did you find that experience?
FA Cup, the win against Arsenal, if you ask me what's the highlight of your career, best moment, I would say that's the FA Cup against Arsenal.
So by the way, I'm an Arsenal fan, and that day broke my heart. You did that to me. You did. You broke my heart. I remember being 1-0 up, all the game, and then Owen scores two in the last 10 minutes.
Exactly. Oh. It was an incredible game. We should have been down and buried after an hour. It should have been 3-0, and you know the game should have been over. Arsenal was the better team by far on the day. But you know, football.
Yeah, it's football, yeah.
It's a funny game. And when you're only 1-0 down, you're still in the game. That's what happened in this game. Yeah, Owen scored two by himself, the second, and made the difference. So the way we won the game was drama pool. And winning the FA Cup was the highlight of my career. And I was saying why? Because, like you said, the FA Cup is massive around the world. In Switzerland, when I grew up, we couldn't watch any international football. You know, we had only three or four channels. They were not showing international football. The only game I was once a year, and that was the FA Cup final. You know, so I grew up only being able to watch English football once a year. So for me, to be honest, when I was watching this game, you know, Wembley, everything, I was thinking these players, they come from another planet. They are extraterrestrials. It's you know, when you grew up, you know, watching this Liverpool Everton 3-2, these games, when you're 12, 13, 14, would you imagine you are going to play in this game and you are going to win the trophy? No. No, never in your life you will imagine that. And that's what happened 10 years later. I played in an FA Cup final and I left the trophy. So that was when I remember when I left the trophy, I was in my head, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago as a young kid back in Switzerland, my small town, thinking, you know.
It's such a shame that the cup's taking such a hit now. I think in the modern football, it's seen as not that important. But I think, as you're saying, when you was 10, 15, our podcast based on the 90s, and it was such a great era for football, and the FA Cup still meant a lot to a lot of people worldwide. Whereas now, I would almost say internationally, it's probably still got a bigger reputation than it has here now, because the love and the drama of the FA Cup still transcends across the world. But in England, it's belittled a little bit now, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
So Liverpool, so you've gone to Liverpool. I'm going to just go back a little bit. What was it like signing for Liverpool when you got in there? It was Houllier, I think, who signed you. Is that right in saying that Houllier brought you in?
Yeah.
What was he like as a manager? Because he's well renowned, he's well liked as a coach prior, being a gentleman, very personable. And then obviously you had quite a lot of characters there as well. How was the transition from Blackburn to Liverpool?
Obviously, Liverpool is a massive club. And I don't think you realize until actually you are playing in such a big club. You know, from the outside, you know Liverpool, it's a big name, it's a big club. When you actually play in it, day after day, you realize how big is the club and the pressure who goes with playing for such a big club. It's like Manchester United, it's Arsenal is a big club as well, you know, tradition club, known everywhere in the world. You go to Australia, America, China, Europe, everywhere. That's the biggest difference when you play for Blackburn, who is well known in England, in Blackburn. But then, you know, you come to Switzerland, Blackburn is not very well known. Liverpool is, you know. So, yeah, the pressure that goes with it is a lot higher. And not always easy to deal with, because every single day they speak about football, they speak about the last result, the next game. Former players, they will speak in the media, in the press, on TV, they will judge you. And when they won 5 Champions League and they judge you, there's not much you can say if they say you were poor, you know.
Did you find the step up in training, the level and intensity of training from Blackburn to Liverpool? Did you notice instantly when you got in, you thought, this is a step up now?
Yeah, you notice the difference of quality. You know, better players, every single player in every position, you know, straight away, you notice, they are better. They are technically better. They are gifted players. The quality of training, technically, the passing, the movement. Yeah, it's a big step, I would say. Yeah.
Who was there? Because you had some great players there. Owen, Gerrard, Carragher. Yeah. But one player that you played, well, crossed paths with was Diouf at Liverpool. Again, a bit of a eccentric. What was he like? Did you get on with him, or was there any... Because he's quite maligned now as a player when he speaks. And I think people that work with him at Liverpool don't often have very nice things to say about him. I'm interested to know what your opinion of him was. Because he was a loud dresser, we know that.
The story probably is we had Nicola Anelka. And Nicola Anelka, when he came on loan, I think he was at Paris Saint-Germain, he's been great for us. He played 6 months, but he was great. He scored important goals. He was very much liked in the dressing room. He's a strange character as well, Nicola Anelka. But at Liverpool, I think it was the right place for him. He liked the city, he liked the people. Like I said, very much liked in the dressing room. And at the end of the season, he wanted to stay. Nicola Anelka wanted to stay. The team wanted him to stay. What happened? He was in 2002, and they were the World Cup. And Diouf was playing for Senegal. He had a good season with RC Lens in France. And he played in the World Cup. And Gerard Houllier decided not to make the move for Nicola Anelka permanent. He instead chose Diouf, you know. He bought Diouf from Lens, and Diouf came after the World Cup, which, you know, they beat France, the world champion, in the first game. He scored a goal. And when he came, probably, you know, he came with a lot of confidence, Diouf. He was thinking, you know, I beat France, played the World Cup, was good in the Ligue 1 in France. But what I noticed in England, that's something also very specific. What happened outside England doesn't count much. You know, you know what I mean? You have to prove yourself in the Premier League in England. And when you come as a foreign player, sometimes when you come to England, you think, oh, I'm a big player because wherever I played, you know, I was big in this club. But no, in England, not. I remember Bernard Lama, he was a keeper. He was the French national keeper. In France, he was massive, he was big. He came to West Ham. He ended up being number 3. Not 2, but 3. So in France, they were thinking, Bernard Lama is number 3 at West Ham. How is that possible? Yeah, it's possible because in England, they don't care about your name. They care about, you know, the performance. And when you came to West Ham, you are not good. You know, so I think that's what happened with Diouf. Diouf, he came, he thought, you know, I'm a big player and all that stuff. And from the first day, in the dressing room, you know, they realized he's quite slow. And Diouf was slow, must admit. He was technically not bad, but he was slow for the Premier League as a striker, as a winger. You need pace. So I remember, you know, listening to, you know, players, you know, you talk about the new signing and stuff. And they were saying, oh, he's slow and all that. And him having, you know, behaving like a big-time player. So straight away from the first day, yeah, you could feel there is something wrong with him, you know. And from this first day, the dressing room, it was difficult. Then he didn't play that much or that well, and then that much for Liverpool. And it ended up being difficult. And we didn't have a good season, to be honest. 2002, 2003 wasn't a great season. We didn't qualify for Champions League. Gerard Houllier was a bit of under pressure because of that, because of the signing of youth. But, you know, as a manager, when you sign a player, you want him to perform. You want him to do well. If not, it's because, you know, you didn't choose the right player. So he pushed for youth to play. Sometimes he didn't deserve to play, but he played again and again. So, yeah, that was probably why he wasn't much liked. And his behavior, like I said, on the pitch, diving all the time. At the beginning, he was diving every game. We had to tell him, hey, here, it's Premier League, my friend. Stay on your feet. Okay, stop diving and all that, thinking you are a clever player by winning a free kick. First thing, the referee don't give free kick for nothing here. And winning by cheating, that's not the mentality here. That's Italy, maybe, no problem, but not England. So, yeah, a few problems with him. But as a person, I remember I shared a room with him a few times. You know, not a bad guy. Not a bad guy, lively guy, you know. I remember, you know, he was on, you know, like a lot of African players, they ring the family, you know. They spend most of their time ringing all the cousin, you know, sister, brother, family, and all that, you know, until 1-2 in the morning. And that was the case with youth.
But obviously, the UEFA Cup final, you beat Barcelona in the lead up to the final. You were 2-0 up inside of 15 minutes. 3-1 at halftime, and you're obviously thinking, yay, we've won this.
Yeah, I think this final against Alaves, a team from, I would say, nowhere really, the name, and I think we thought we've done the hard work by beating Roma in the quarter final, in the last, I think we beat Roma in the last 16.
Yeah.
We beat Porto in the quarter final. And then we beat Barcelona in the semi-final. So we thought we've done the hard work because now we play Alaves in the final. The start of the game, obviously, was exactly the perfect start. 2-0 after, I think, 16, 17 minutes. So nearly too easy. Because when you play in the final, you think, that'll be a hard game. That's a final. So you don't expect to win so easy after 15 minutes. We were in total control. Then they scored on a free kick, you know, header, back post, 2-1. But right after, 3-1. Once again, you know, so we only thought, well, they score once, but, you know, free kick, nothing major. When we came back at halftime, I think the feeling was the game is finished, it's over. It's already done. It's 3-1 and it's easy. It'll be 4-5-1. And when we came back in the second half with this mentality, you know, they had a different mentality. They fought 3-1 down, nothing to lose now. Nothing to lose anymore now. And you could feel they were up front in the second half and we were not. So in the space of 15 minutes, that was the opposite. They scored 2 goals back, 3-3.
Did you, sorry, Steve, did you feel, you just said that, did you feel then at 3-1, even coming out, the minute you come out of the halftime, did you feel a change in the dynamics? Did you think at that stage they're here to come at us now? Or was it kind of when they got to 3-3 that you just, it was like, shit?
No, straight away in the game, I remember we were overconfident, slightly overconfident. And when the referee kicked up the second half, they played much more like with freedom, more aggressively going forward and all that. Like a team who's got nothing to lose anymore. They're not thinking about doing the right stuff defensively and being solid and all that. No. And straight away, we thought, it's not as easy as it was in the first half. You know, they put you under pressure, they play forward, they make some runs and all that. And on top of that, they scored two goals in the space of 15 minutes. So after 1 hour, it was 3-3. So it was back to square one. So then you think, wow, now we are in a game.
Can you, at 3-3, can you hear the manager starting to, or the captain, did Gerrard start saying to everyone, listen, calm down, keep your positions? Did you still think you could win, or was you now thinking, we're going to lose this?
No, I think at 3-3, we realized, and the staff and Gerrard on the bench realized, now we are in the proper game. Now you have, in a way, to wake up. No, wake up, because if not, we are going to lose the game. We're still in the game, but we have to wake up. And I think after that, we played better. You know, we stabilized the ship, I would say, you know, the boat. We stabilized it a little bit. And then we score 4-3. But then they equalize once again. You know, then you think, wow, this game, you know. And we had to go to extra time. That's something at half time you would never expect. Never expect a 4-4, conceded four goals, and had to go to extra time with a sudden death goal at the time, which, you know, is a sudden death, you never know. You don't have 30 minutes to win. One mistake and it's over. But, you know, luckily, we scored the goal. So that's why it ended up, you know, in our favour. By the end of the day, we had a bit of luck to win this game.
What was the night out like after? Did you celebrate hard on after that win, or did you all go back and have a nice sleep?
The problem was, like, after the FA Cup, we won on the Saturday against Arsenal. We should have celebrated for 3 days. We couldn't, because we were playing Wednesday, the UEFA Cup final. Same thing again. On Wednesday, you win the UEFA Cup. You should celebrate again. We couldn't, because we were playing Charlton away on Saturday, 3 o'clock. And the Charlton game was the biggest game of the season. Why? Because we needed to win to qualify for the Champions League. We missed the Champions League the year before by losing against Bradford 1-0, last game of the season. We couldn't miss 2 years in a row, you know. So for the club, for the money and everything, the biggest game, and it's strange to say that, it was Charlton away.
Was you disappointed a little bit that you couldn't really celebrate any of your... Because you won the treble, but you couldn't really celebrate at any stage. Because I was looking at this prior, and reading up, everyone said that there was no time. It was like, won the game, we went to the hotel, we had a few drinks, travelled, got home, next game.
It was a shame, because you don't really have the time to enjoy. You know, relax, enjoy, celebrate, a few beer, have a lie down the next morning. We couldn't do that. The next morning, we were up, breakfast, warm down, training for the one who didn't play and all that, concentrate again, doing the right thing, have the right diet, drinking water and all that. And the same thing after the UEFA Cup. And then we played Charlton on the Saturday. We won against Charlton. So it was... We've done everything, winning 3 trophies. We qualified the club for the Champions League. So it was perfect. And then it was the end of the season. Sunday, we had the parade in the city centre on the double-deck bus. Oh, that was a great, great moment. You know, one of the highlights as well of my career, you know, as an atmosphere and thing. And after that, it was a holiday time. So everybody was going away, you know, Sunday night or Monday morning, flying, driving somewhere on holiday. So we didn't really have the time as a team, as a squad, with the staff to celebrate as much as we should have or as we would have liked. Yeah.
Wow. Some of the players you mentioned about Owen and Gerrard and Carragher, did you get on with all of those players? Was there anything that kind of... Because obviously Carragher was competing for your place slightly at the time. What was the competition like? How did you deal with that, knowing there's someone coming up to challenge for your position?
When you play in the top, in a big club, you know that there will be there will be a player fighting for one spot, really. And at Liverpool, we had quite a few centre-backs. Jamie was playing centre-back. We had Marcus Babel, who could play centre-back. We had Rigobert Song at the time, who was, you know, an international centre-back. We had Steve Staunton, who was playing at the back. We had Phil Babb, who was playing at the back. They were all there in 99. So, yeah, there were only two places. We were playing four at the back, so as a centre-back, only two places. What happened was that Cara ended up playing left-back and Marcus Babel ended up playing right-back. So, and a few other centre-backs, then they left the club, you know, to get playing time. But, you know, that's how it is in, like I said, in big clubs. I never had problems with anybody and with, you know, with that. None with Jamie, he's a great lad and also a great character, you know. So, no, I had no problem with that.
Who was the biggest prankster in the Liverpool changing room?
Robbie Fowler, Carragher was one of them. Robbie, Cara, yeah, probably these two.
Euro 96, you play in Euro 96. Now, that tournament for England fans is iconic. Yeah. The song is coming home. That must drive you mad still, is it? They still sing that song now. It's coming home, all that sort of thing. How was it to play in that tournament? Did you feel the buzz of that tournament that we felt as fans back then?
No, the tournament was great. We were lucky as a Swiss team because we drew England in the group. And we were lucky because we played the opening game, Wembley 96 opening game. What's better than that? You know, when we had the draw, yes, England, Holland, Scotland. And then you have, you know, in the group, the game plan, first game, opening game, England. Now it was top. And Swiss-wise, we drew 1-1, you know.
Yeah. So
it was something like, everybody were expecting a 3-0. And we were 1-0 down, Shearer scored first half, and we equalized penalty 80 minutes or something. So, yeah, it was great. And then we moved to Birmingham, where we played Villa Park or two next games, Holland and Scotland. Great experience. Yeah, great memories, great experience, to be honest. Yeah.
Who was the best striker you faced? Who was there? Was there any forward that you just hated to play against?
Yeah. Thierry Henry. I have to say, I played against many, many top strikers, Andy Cole, top strikers, Batistuta, Van Nistelrooy, a lot. That's the one who came, you know. But Thierry Henry was the most difficult player to play against, especially, to be honest, at home, at Anfield. Why? Because when we played away at Highbury, small pitch, Highbury, and we could defend deep. We didn't have to attack. So when you defend deep as a centre-back, it's quite good because you don't have space to run in behind. We were organised and, you know, it wasn't easy. It was okay. The problem was when we played at Anfield, we had to attack. You know, the fans, they want you to attack. You can't sit deep at Anfield. And when you're going to lose the ball, that's when you're in trouble, because there is space everywhere to run in behind. And with Pires, Viltor, Lundberg, Bergkamp to give the ball. And Thierry Henry was so quick. It was a nightmare. I remember. I hated playing against Thierry Henry.
Two more questions. One is about goalkeepers. As a centre-back, how much is your game reliant on a good goalkeeper in terms of psychology, in terms of thinking, if someone gets past me, I've got a goalkeeper's going to stop it. Or if you've got someone that's a bit more shaky, does that alter the way that you defend in that game?
Yeah. I think the goalkeeper, you must trust him. You know, if you trust him, you're in confidence. If you're confident, you play better. So you need to have somebody who you know he will save you a few times in the game. As a centre-back, your duty is to stop everything, defend the crosses, win the header, you know, the tackle. But sometimes you play good striker, you have to accept that they will, you know, strike. They will beat you once or twice a game. But then you expect your goalkeeper to make the save. And if you go in a 1-1 knowing that the goalkeeper can save you behind, you go with more confidence. If you have more confidence, you have more chance to win the 1-1. If you go in 1-1 knowing, oh, if you pass me, it's a goal, what are you going to do? You're going to defend by going back your goal, not trying to win the challenge, to tackle. You're not comfortable. Same on crosses. You need to know that the keeper will come, he will collect the ball, he will help you. If you have to win every single header during the game because the goalkeeper never comes out to collect the ball, it's difficult. So the goalkeeper is massive for a centre-back.
Who was the best goalkeeper? Because Liverpool were known to have quite a lot of dodgy keepers over the year up until now, really, Valison. Yeah. Who did you least enjoy knowing was behind you, or most enjoy who was behind you?
In Liverpool, I must admit, only good goalkeepers. Blackburn, the same. Tim Flowers, you know, great goalkeeper. Then Brad Friedel. Liverpool, Sander Westerveld, when I arrived, good goalkeeper. Then made a few mistakes, and Gerard Houllier decided, you know, to buy two goalkeepers, Chris Kirkland and Jerzy Dudek. Two good goalkeepers as well. But Jerzy Dudek was probably the best one I played with. Dodgy keeper. No, I had one in Switzerland here, but you wouldn't know. Oh, probably he played a little bit at Fulham. Zuber Böhler.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bit dodgy, you know, but...
Slippery hands. I think he went out on the pitch, greased his hands up, and then went out to play football. Was you a bit disappointed that how your career finished at Liverpool? Moving on. I mean, did you feel that you could have stayed a little bit longer and challenged, or would you?
I think when Benitez arrived, I was in starting 11 every game before he arrived. Then when you arrived, I had the feeling straight away, he put me under pressure. It will be somebody, you know, competing for my spot. I'm not sure I will start playing. And then the first game came, I wasn't in starting 11. And it's always the same. How do you react as a player? And with the experience now, I didn't react the way I should. You know, the way you should as a player is, okay, there is a new manager, he's going to challenge you. You have to improve your game. You have to listen what he wants. Maybe it's something different than the previous manager or something. You have to work harder. Maybe, yeah. And you have to fight. You have to fight for your place. Maybe you have to wait maybe 6-7 games, 8 games. I don't know. 6 weeks, 2 months. But if you work hard, if you listen, if you fight, you have the chance, and then you have to take it. That's the way you should respond to that. That's where I should have responded. But
how did you respond?
Me, I responded thinking, you know, in this club, I won trophy. I'm in the starting 11, you know, and now you put me on the bench. I don't like it, you know. So... instead of doing what I said, working, fighting and all that, I didn't really do that. I was thinking myself offended maybe. So then I thought, okay, if I'm not playing, I'm going to move on. So I asked to move. Obviously, if you do that, the manager will think, I can't count on him. He doesn't want to fight for his spot, he wants to move. And I asked him to move to Man City. Kevin Keegan was at Man City. They offered me 3 years contract. I had only one left at Liverpool. And we had a window in 2004, it was.
Yeah.
September 2004. So right at the end of the window, I had the possibility to move to City with Kevin Keegan. So I thought, yes, I'd like to do it. So I asked to move. And the club said no. Now, because now if you move, we have to replace you and it's too late in the window.
When you say the club said no, was that the managing director or was that Rafa Benitez who said no?
I don't know. Rick Perry told me no. Did he discuss with Benitez? And Benitez said no, probably. You know, by the end of the day, the club, Rick Perry told me no. You can't move, it's too late in the window. Obviously, when you do that, when you react like that, the manager, he knows, this player, can I count on him? Not really. So from that point, I could see the relationship broken, you know. And then it's been a difficult period for me.
But do you think Rafa Benitez is known somewhat as man management's not been as the best? Do you think he could have handled it differently? Did you pull him aside or did he pull you aside and say, Stephen, you know?
No, he didn't do that. He's a great manager. He managed, you know, big teams, great teams. He won the Champions League. You know, you can't argue with that. Tactically, he's very aware tactically, you know. He's got his philosophy. There is nothing to say about that. So the only thing, like you said, the man management is not, let's say he could do better. He could do better because, like you said, you know, if you're in the starting 11 and you're not anymore, maybe you would think he can explain you why. Or he could tell you, I still count on you, but I want you to improve this part of your game. Even you are 31, 32, you know, you're a bit behind and I prefer this player. But if you improve, you get your chance, you know, and stuff like that. He's not, or he wasn't at the time, maybe now he has changed. But it wasn't at the time the manager would do that. So then you find yourself on the bench, then not even in the squad anymore. Then the relationship is broken, but you still haven't one conversation with him. You know?
Yeah, it's a shame because looking at your career, there was a bit of to and fro about how it ended. Then you went to Celtic, a brief spell at Celtic alone. You had a few injuries, I think. Yeah. And then you was getting to 31, 32, and naturally, the amount of football you played, injury started playing a part. But you ended up at Wigan and had a quite successful spell at Wigan. How was that going back up to Lancashire and finishing your career somewhat in that part of the world again?
Actually, you know, when I moved to Wigan, I didn't have to move from my house in Liverpool. When I went to Celtic, it was in the hotel 6 months. And then I ended up signing for two years at Blackburn. I was injured the second season. I couldn't play one game, so I finished on that, but I always stayed in Liverpool. I always live in the same house. That was something I wanted to do, and as a family as well. I didn't want to move anymore because I liked, like I said, I like the culture. I like Liverpool. I like where I was living. I could have moved to Italy, smaller clubs, but I had quite offers in Germany, France, you know, I could have. But at the end of the day, I didn't want to. I preferred to stay. I could have moved to London. I had Charlton, I had Fulham, I had Southampton, you know. But we'd have to move the family and stuff like that. So then I had Wigan promoted, you know, half an hour from Liverpool. I could just drive, no problem. It was easy. We had a good season. Great season if you take the size of the
great
club.
Great season, yeah. Fantastic season.
I think we were second just before Christmas. Then we ended up 8th or 9th. We went to the League Cup final. Well, we lost 4-0 against United, but we beat Arsenal in the semi-final. So, you know, for Wigan, it was good. So we had a good season. And then I could go back to Blackburn, which I knew the club and all that. And once again, I could just travel. It was 45 minutes, so no problem. And you know.
Mentality-wise, in terms of being an elite athlete, how do you deal with the mental side? When you said about Benitez, when you fell out, but that happened, how did that impact you mentally in terms of thinking, I'm going to move, the stresses that it brought on? How did you deal with that at the time? Because obviously now, the mental health side is a lot more mentioned and dealt with.
Yeah.
I think we look at it back in the day, and it's definitely in the 90s, which we more work in. But what is the support, and how did you feel that worked for you and other players that you worked with?
There is a massive difference. If I take when I was a player, and if I take now, I've been a manager in the professional league, in the top league in Switzerland. Massive difference, mental-wise. Back at the time, I think the manager, they were picking the starting 11, the subs, and they didn't speak with anybody, really. You were not in the team. You went home. You do whatever you want. They don't speak. They don't explain. They don't praise you. If you do your job, it's normal. They just tell you when it's bad. When it's bad, they tell you. When you do a good job, it was just like, it's normal. They didn't care, really. It was a lot, in a way, I think it was a lot harder. These days, very different. Maybe too much in the opposite side.
Agreed.
Because as a manager, now these days, you have to praise all the time, even for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, a bit like kids at school. It's always well done. Oh, you've done great. Nice. It's perfect. And then when it's not done, not good, you cannot really say like that. You cannot just say, oh, it was bad. If you say bad, oof. No, you have to say, listen, you can maybe do a little bit better. Think about it. What do you think? So maybe now sometimes it's the opposite way, you know.
I completely agree. It's gone completely.
Sometimes, okay, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, it was too harsh. But now sometimes you have to say, when it's bad, it's bad. Okay? Yeah. Huh? And now you react, please. I don't have to tell you, what do you think? Can you do better? How could you do improve? Okay. So, yeah, you have to have the right balance. But the mental aspect, it's in every situation in life, it's vital. You know that. If you're good in your head, you will perform better. You will work better. But yes, change a lot, especially in the last, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years, I think. And it's still changing now. You know, when we're speaking now, it's changing all the time. This mental aspect. Sometimes I think we are going a bit too far.
I completely...
So now you've gone into management yourself now. Are you the type of coach, manager who puts an arm around a player? Like the man of management side, which we spoke about with Rafa Benitez. Are you that guy now? You've taken a bit from every manager you worked under.
Yeah.
And you implement that in your own management style.
I had to change a lot. I started in 2009 with the first team in Switzerland. It was like a League One. If I compare in 2009 and now, 12 years later, I had to change a lot.
Yeah.
I had to. Because of the experience I made. I made probably some mistakes. Definitely made mistakes. But I had to change because the mentality has changed, because the society has changed. And that's what I was explaining to you before.
Yeah.
You can't speak to players as you were speaking to players a few years ago. It has totally changed. And the problem I experience now is the same in England, the same everywhere. Manager, you are always the one responsible and the only one responsible. You know, as soon as the result is not going the right way, bang, it's your fault. It's very rarely the player's fault. Very rarely, yeah, they said the players should perform better and all that. But at the end of the day, they will always say, oh, yeah, but the players, you know, they're not in the right frame of mind. They don't perform because of the manager. You know, it's always because of the manager, because he doesn't find the right keys to open, you know, his head or I don't know, and stuff like that. I don't think it's correct. I don't think it should be that way, but it is. So if you want to be a manager these days, you have to deal with that. You have to deal with that. Probably you need to get some help from outside, but I think the job is getting harder and harder, always more difficult.
It's impossible, I think. Now, I think that
I think so.
I don't know how to describe it. Football now, I'll use England more so, but football now compared to the 90s before Sky came in, or when Sky first came in for the TV. Yeah. It was a working man's game, it was a game that you can fall in love when you take your family to. Mid 2000s, it turned slightly into a corporate structure with player manager. So you had the football director and you have the manager. Mm-hmm. The manager's no longer a manager, it's a coach. Then you have the first team coach. There's too many layers to it now. There was nothing wrong with the way the system was put out before. You know, a manager would come in. And yes, you're right. The structure in terms of having too much power and speaking to players inappropriately to somewhat. Yeah, okay, that was harsh. But there has to be a balance. And now the managers, you look at any manager now, in six games, you're in a crisis. If you're an index 500 company, if you work for Apple as a CEO or wherever you are, if you have 6 weeks, you don't do anything in 6 weeks.
No.
You need to implement your vision. Why are you so quick to just be like, oh, he's been in... I'll use David Moyes. I'm a Man United fan. He came to Man United. He got 8 months, which is a disgrace. Yeah. Did he do things wrong? Of course he did. You know, should he have been given longer? Yeah. Moyes is a very good manager. He's proven to be a good manager. And he's showing it again now. What would you check? If you could change something now, what would you change to make life easier for managers?
The big problem is the chairman and directors, they listen to the players. You know, if you start to do that in a club, you're dead. You're dead. Because the players, the one who is responsible for the result, is the manager. It's not the director or the chairman. But the problem is these days, the players, they noticed that when they're not happy with the manager, when they're training too hard, when they're not playing the position they want, when they're not in the starting 11, what they do? They take the phone and they ring straight away the chairman or the director, you know? And instead of saying, listen, my friend, you're only a player, you do what the manager tells you and you shut up, they start to listen. Ah, the manager, that technique is not very good. He doesn't play me in the right position. Ah, yes. Ooh, I'm going to have a word with him. You train too hard, twice a day. Yeah, we have heavy legs, or I don't know. Ah, okay, maybe we should. You know what I mean? We're not prepared mentally right for the game. Ah, the manager, he can't prepare you right for the game. And they start to listen. You know what I mean? They start to listen to this player, this one, this one. The players, they're clever. They know that. And they get the manager on the sack. As simple as that.
Player power is far too...
And that's it. So as a manager, you have no chance. Absolutely no chance. And, you know, you take Lampard, Chelsea, they were doing great. First part of the season, they were doing great. No problem. In the Champions League, in the league, then suddenly they start to lose a few games. Is he become a bad manager in 3 weeks? I don't think so. He's still the same manager. 3 weeks. He can't change that much in 3 weeks. You know what I mean? But what happened? He only lost a few games for different reasons. You know? Sacked. Why? Because a few players in this Chelsea squad, they must have ring, you know, the director. The director must have speak with Abramovich and he's not the right man anymore. He was, but he's not anymore the right man. And that's it.
What would you like to see as your next step in your managing career? Where would you like to go to in terms of your sense of a very difficult job? Why take it on? Is it the challenge or is it the feel that you can make a change in that industry?
As a manager, it's very, very difficult to find a place to manage, you know. You know, there's a lot of manager without work and very few teams. So you can be happy if you find a team to manage, to be honest. Obviously, if you play like myself in England, yes, you would like to manage in England. You're not speaking about Premier League because you have to be realistic. But even if you think Championship, no chance. Even League One, you think, I would like to manage in League One. But it's very hard. I don't think I would get the chance to manage in League One, you know. So then you think, okay, I need to do well in the Swiss League, small league, you know, not very well watched or something like that. But you have to try to do well and take step after step. And that's it. But I don't think you can project yourself too much because it's a hard job. So if you find a team to manage, you can already, I would say, be happy.
Well, Stephen, I've got a position at my shop, a baker. I need a You're welcome to come in and bring some.
Why not?
Me.
Have a few beer after the work, you know.
Holland, did you have any more questions before I just finish off with the fastest round?
No, you carry on, mate. He's been brilliant. You've been brilliant with all the questions that you've answered. Thank you so much.
Okay, no problem.
I'm just going to finish off with a quick fire round. So I'll ask you a few quick fire questions. Yep. First name that comes to your head, just pop it out for me. So the first question, best manager you played under?
Royalton.
Best centre-back partnership?
Sami Pierre.
Worst dressed player at any club?
B. McKinley.
We said best trophy, you've got that. Preferred player for a club or for country?
Club.
Who wins in a fight, Billy McKinley or Colin Hendry?
Colin Hendry.
90s football or 2000s football?
90.
Good lad, yes. Ronaldo or Messi?
Ronaldo.
Good. Gerrard or Scholes?
Gerrard.
Giggs or Overmars?
Giggs.
Yeah! Listen, ladies and gentlemen, everyone, thank you so much, Stephen. You've been absolutely amazing. Yeah. You've given us so much of your time. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Everyone, that's Stephen Henshaw. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Podcast Network.